Hurricane Katrina swept through the Gulf Coast region as a Category 4 storm on August 29, 2005, leaving a path of death and destruction. Coastal areas in Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana were decimated, and thousands are dead. While avoiding a direct hit from Katrina, New Orleans, Louisiana, which lies several feet below sea level, was most impacted. With nearly 500,000 residents in panic, Mayor Ray Nagin issued a mandatory evacuation order prior to the hurricane, calling Katrina a storm that most of us have long feared. But many proud New Orleans residents decided to wait it out. Initial storm damage was severe, but not catastrophic. Then, about 12 hours after Katrina passed through, several sections of the levee system that protected New Orleans from Lake Pontchartrain gave way, and the city's poorest neighborhoods were flooded, up to 10 feet of water in some areas. The slow response time of local, state, and federal officials to rescue people stranded in their homes led to many unnecessary deaths. 10 days after the storm, an opportunity arose to go to Houston and document the stories of Katrina's survivors. I jumped at the chance, not knowing where this journey might lead. I didn't know if anyone would actually talk with me or what they might have to say, but I had to find out. What follows is a radio documentary made up of fragments of their stories and experiences. Surely, this isn't a complete picture of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, only a glimpse at a moment in time after the flood.
I had to go from my house to my attic, from my attic to the rooftop.
43-year-old Larry Zardes spent 2 days on his rooftop and eventually had to save himself from floodwaters.
I decided to leave the rooftop because the water was rapidly rising. And I really didn't think I'd be sitting here this day to be able to give you this interview. No one wouldn't stop to rescue me. So I had asked myself, how do you want to go? Here on this rooftop or just trying to get to safety? I said, I think I have a better chance of trying to get saved. And I just went into the water. I walked from I swam from my house to maybe 5 blocks away, which is the interstate 610.
On the freeway, people waited for days with no food or water. Many took it upon themselves to stay alive by any means necessary.
While waiting for assistance to be rescued from the 610 in scorching heat, I'm talking about it was 110 in the shade. I became very thirsty. Hell, there was a store right down the street from the interstate with water. I needed water, you know. So I went and got me a bottle of water out of there. The only looting I saw was people going into stores. And that was all about survival. So you got to understand that, and you know, that should be acceptable. That should be, people should be able to overlook that. That was a must. That was a need. I needed that water.
While some took their chances and waited out the storm at home, about 20,000 people, including 52-year-old Tricella Parker, went to the New Orleans Superdome for shelter.
It was real awful. It was a lot of backup with the toilet. We were sleeping on the floors, and we were treated bad by the policeman.
It was okay until the water got cut off.
Latasha Allen, a 27-year-old mother of three, describes the conditions in the Superdome as 5 days of pure hell.
Then after that, the guards was patrolling. Then you saw less guards. They treated us like refugees, animals. They brought the water on pallets, and they left the water. Everybody diving in to get the food, diving to get the water. Food lines was wrapped around the Superdome. By the time you get to the front of the line, food gone. It's been a hassle, and they got to stop the line. So it was survival after that.
To make matters worse, Allen says there was extreme violence, both from evacuees and from guards.
One guy took the guard gun and shot him in the leg. Then they had to find the guy that had the gun. And they finally, you know, they finally contained him. The next morning, we had to wake up to the dorm on smoking. They tried to set the dorm on fire. So that many people in that capacity, they freaked. And they really was trying to get out of there. And it was a lot of people pushing and shoving. The guards had us by gunpoint. If that barricade came down, they said it was going to shoot. And we feared for our lives.
Jazz musician Joe Zappardo also took refuge in the Superdome.
I found out they were flying the army in with machine guns and were being held prisoner there. and they said they'd shoot anybody to try to leave. So there were 20,000 of us in there, and the conditions started deteriorating and everything. You know, the bathroom was getting bad, no food and all. So it was hot in there, and I had to get out of there, so I had to figure a way to escape. So I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and join a volunteer to fold the cots up. And the next day, that's when I made my move, and I escaped down the stairway cases.
5 days later, the U.S. military evacuated those left in the Superdome and brought about 22,000 people to a temporary shelter at the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas. Another 5,000 New Orleans evacuees were taken to the George R. Brown Convention Center in downtown Houston. FEMA and the American Red Cross ran the relief operations in the Astrodome. Conditions were better than the Superdome, but Red Cross services were inadequate.
I've been complaining about Red Cross, so they gave me a Red Cross badge and a jacket. And that's really the only way that I can get through to help.
Jamar Jabaz, a Red Cross volunteer from Houston, offered free haircuts to Katrina survivors. He was very critical of the American Red Cross.
What is your main complaint about the Red Cross?
My main complaint is they got clothes and stuff and they don't give it out to them. They got hot food they can serve, but they don't. They got a bunch of money and they don't give it to them.
Jabaz wasn't the only one with harsh words.
I work officially with Red Cross, and it's a joke.
Another Red Cross volunteer from New York City, who asked not to be identified, was giving out clothes. He bemoans the hierarchical structure of the country's biggest relief organization.
It's not as it seems. We have people down here that do jobs. We have people down here that want to give orders. And we have people down here that just, for the hell of it, they just want to be here. Money flows in, but just like they don't want to do anything with the money.
Living conditions in the Astrodome and other shelters in Houston were disgraceful, with thousands of people squeezed together on cots. Food lines were long and would often run out before everyone was served. No professional grief and trauma counseling was available. After a few days, Larry Zardes joined forces with about 40 other Katrina survivors to organize for better living conditions.
I want to try to make a difference, you know, and try to be of help to people.
The survivors' leadership team came together with help from the Metropolitan Organization, better known as TMO, a Houston grouping of congregations, schools, and other institutions dedicated to developing leadership skills among ordinary citizens. Zardes and about 10 others met with Houston officials to present a signed petition which listed 5 immediate needs to improve conditions in the Astrodome.
Providing immediate financial assistance, to initiate a transaction to dignify living, to create a public database of survivors, because a lot of us were separated from our loved ones. Some buses was coming here to the Houston area, some buses went to Lafayette, and some buses went to Thibodeau. And that's the way that went. So, you know, and a lot of folks here in the Astrodome are separated from their loved ones. Number 4, improve communication. You know, and provide us with long-term recovery plan.
It took FEMA officials a full week after the Astrodome was opened as a shelter to hand out debit cards worth $2,000. Again, Latasha Allen.
It's a shame it took this long for them to even try. And they're putting the blame on FEMA and trying to point the blame. There's a lot of people out here, you know, used to getting paid and depending on themselves. Now you got to depend on the government, and it's taking too long. You know, you used to having money, and the whole week went by, you broke. You have to survive some kind of way. The bus is not free anymore. We don't have money to go here and there. The things take time, and we're trying to be patient. But after so long, you're just in a whole other city, a whole other environment. You're lost, and you're fearing for your life.
Attempts to get straight answers from Houston officials about permanent housing was a common complaint from Katrina survivors. By and large, New Orleans residents evacuated to Houston after Hurricane Katrina are grateful for the help and hospitality they've received, but after 2 weeks, signs posted outside listed services no longer available to them. The list included medication refills, eye exams, dental care, and immunizations. No FEMA or Red Cross officials were on hand, and the only service open to residents there was a post office. Upon arrival, one unidentified woman was trying to get answers about this loss of services.
What did they do that overnight? What I gotta do, Lord have mercy? You give me a non-residential, and you got me living in a hotel, but I still can't get it. I've been here 4 times, and I had assistance. Why all of a sudden everything shut down? I don't understand that.
Nobody else is going back in there unless they're still staying here.
But y'all change it overnight. I've been here 4 times and I got waited on. I've been through here and all of a sudden.
They're shutting everything down, man.
We got prescriptions.
I understand that.
That's Section 8. Prescriptions, medical.
Well, that's where I work. That's what I was asking.
Both shelters in Houston for Hurricane Katrina survivors were fully closed by September 20th. Anna Holly is public information officer for the George R. Brown Convention Center.
We've done our job. We processed and found housing for the evacuees that are here.
So what's next for the George R. Brown Convention Center?
Back to business. Back
Meaning?
To conventions. Texas School Board Association.
Despite Holly's claims, not everyone found housing.
Well, everybody got apartments, except me. So everybody going to apartments somewhere.
Larry Washington says conditions at the George R. Brown Convention Center were okay, but he feels shafted.
It's been all right, you know, but now it got tricky because they tell you they want you out, then you go get a room, and then you try to get some help. Then they tell you you can't get in the building and get no assistance no more, so now everybody got houses but me.
Washington wasn't the only one left in the lurch.
If you don't have the paperwork and stuff, you can't get no apartment.
Craig Kennedy, a father of two, is staying at a cousin's house in Houston with 20 others from New Orleans.
He just said he was going to give me a phone number to call, and phone number ain't going to do no good because all it do is ring. So it's all downhill.
Kennedy is unsure what his next move will be.
I guess you're just going to have to find your job and try and do it on your own. But it's hard to find a job and you don't have no car. My car in New Orleans. So it's no help. The people kind, but the government not helping you. So everything through.
The remaining 4,000 New Orleans evacuees were shipped to another shelter at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. Gloria Gabriel, a middle-aged woman who lived at the George R. Brown Convention Center, found an apartment, but says Houston officials are confused about where other New Orleans evacuees might end up.
Some of these places were shipping people away who don't know where they was going and stuff. But a lot of people turned it down because everybody want to know where they're going. But it's nice of them to do it, but some people want this shift anywhere they could shift you, because they want you out of here.
Erica Smith, a 25-year-old mother of three, stayed at the Astrodome and Reliant Arena. She says the conditions there were really rough and is glad to be on her way somewhere new, though she isn't sure where that is.
We're going to another shelter for right now.
Do you know where?
No, I won't stay here, but like everybody, you know, they get to down to 1,500 people and just stop helping, you know, with houses and stuff. You know, everybody should get out. But when I, you know, they just stop helping. Now they send people to Arkansas, California, you know, all kind of different states, you know.
Operation Homecoming is a Baptist organization helping to register people for more permanent housing. Green Stevens Jr., a New Orleans evacuee himself, has been volunteering with the group and says many of the people still waiting for housing have special needs.
Some of them are not so quick to apprehend what's going on. Some of them are still in a state of shock as to where they are, and they don't even know what their next move is. You're dealing with a lot of people who are handicapped, who are on medication, on dialysis, and things of that nature, who have special needs, and it's going to be a real task to facilitate them.
Green contends many of them don't want to be so far away from home.
But a lot of them have already been displaced, and they don't want to get that much further away from their home and their situations. So it's going to be a hard call to see how many people are going to actually just go to Arkansas or go to Huntsville.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day? I know I'm not wrong. The feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away.
New Orleans is under a dusk-to-dawn curfew with near-constant helicopter flyovers. Military, police, and private security patrol the streets. Corey Brown, a U.S. cavalryman stationed at Fort Hood, Texas, insists their mission is to provide humanitarian aid.
It's a humanitarian mission. Why do you need weapons?
Well, the area was not secure when we came in it, and we're just here to provide a little bit of presence to assist in the security of this area. Help the local law officials out with just patrolling the streets and those kind of things.
Much of the city where floodwaters had receded was like a ghost town with few visible signs of life. Dead animal carcasses were abundant. Many homes were destroyed. Uprooted trees, overturned cars, boats, garbage, and any manner of debris littered the streets. A thick, cake-like layer of dried mud clung to every surface where floodwaters had risen. The rancid, salty stench of decaying flesh and vegetation was palpable. Pasquale Hawk from Luxembourg volunteers with the humanitarian intervention team, who are in New Orleans working to pump out waters from the flooded areas.
It's simple to help the people here who have nearly nothing. I see all the houses are destroyed and so on, and we want to give our small kind of help to the people here of New Orleans and all the area.
A few blocks away was a platoon of about a dozen men in camouflage, standing around joking and taking pictures, while two backhoe operators attempted to clear the area. Major Amy Hanna is Public Information Officer for Task Force All-American.
Are these guys here on lunch break, or what's their story? How come they're all kind of just standing around? They don't seem to be doing anything.
Well, they're here helping the 307th engineers who are working, and they're trading off so they can get a break and go back to work then to help out the community.
And have any residents, have you found any residents alive in these buildings in this neighborhood?
Oh, yes.
People that have not been evacuated or just didn't leave?
Some people choose to stay, so we're still in communication with those people and assisting as needed, and especially in the medical arenas where we're focusing with the local community leaders and the parish leaders in the schools and in the working community hospitals to get them back on their feet as they progress.
Some areas of New Orleans were abuzz with the activity of construction workers, military patrols, and charity organizations cleaning up. But in neighborhoods where floodwaters had receded, the place was quiet. Too quiet. In the Fourth Ward, 52-year-old Vietnam vet Robert McAlvin sat shirtless outside the laundromat he runs. A pack of Camel No Filters were at his side. Sipping from a can of Bush beer, McAlvin was listening to a transistor radio, blaring out the news.
Most of the people, it seems like it's kind of a ghost town around here, yeah?
Ain't that a grace? Ain't that a grace? I call it a vacation.
Yeah?
Yeah. I ride a laundromat. And every day I have to hear, oh, this is too high, that's too high. Now the water's too high. It's kind of strange, though. You know, no cars, no traffic. Hell, usually you can't even walk across the street.
Any concerns about the environmental impact? They're saying lots of chemical spills and could.
And.
I don't know.
And.
You're not worried about getting cancer about that? Nothing like that?
I worry about a lot of things. That is not none of them.
What do you worry about?
Living. That's it. And they kept telling me, come on, let's go to the Superdome. Not me. I don't go to the Superdome when it's open, you know. I'm not going there now.
How come? Yeah, why not?
Because I had my war.
Yeah.
Now, you think I got time to be fucking around with somebody that's, hey, bro, I don't like you. You don't look like you. Wait a minute, hold up. Because I'm about living, you know. Put it very simply, trouble I love, peace I do despise. This is a vacation to me. I don't have to deal with them. See, like this is a ghost town. I don't have to deal with nobody. Only aggravation I might have would be y'all, and y'all ain't aggravating me. You know what I'm saying? There's nobody here to bother me.
I asked McAlvin how he survived the storm.
Storm didn't do nothing. As far as the hurricane, did nothing. The flood, yeah. Flooded my laundromat, flooded my house, had my bed floating, everything floating. I went upstairs. Water came up to about 5-6 feet. But it only went, it covered the bottom floor, it didn't get to the top floor. It's steadily going down. The water's going down. The water's not the problem. Not anymore. It was a problem at first. Looters, yeah, we had the looters. Whoopee, we had the whoopies. And other than that, life is life.
Things are a bit different in other parts of New Orleans.
They dumped a truckload of milk out there so they could steal the truck and take their family out of town. But the dumbasses left the lights on so the battery died and they couldn't move it. We're glad to see those people go.
Bob Rue owns an Oriental rug shop on the outskirts of the French Quarter, a part of New Orleans which didn't flood. He stayed behind to protect his store from looters. He claims he almost shot someone.
I watched Emeril Lagasse's place in the Whitney Bank, and I put looters will be shot all over my friend's stores and businesses, and those are fine.
They cleaned out Walgreens around the corner. Winn-Dixie grocery store, A&P, yeah, that was weird.
Evelyn Redmond runs a small bar on the French Quarter called Evelyn's Place. Inside the bar was Frank, an elderly fellow who declined to give his last name. Frank speculates on why there was so much looting in New Orleans.
We have a lot of policemen in this area that when the hurricane was coming, they head for the hills, took off. So in essence, they have an estimate between 300 and 500 policemen that just left their duties to take care of the families.
Larry Hurst is tending bar at Johnny White's, a staple of the French Quarter. Despite it all, the little bar on the corner of Bourbon and Orleans streets somehow manages to keep the beer cold.
You're pretty much the only place open right now on Bourbon Street, right?
Well, we've been open for 14 years. Haven't not closed in 14 years.
Were you closed for the hurricane?
We haven't been closed in 14 years.
Johnny White's stayed open and had a hurricane party when Katrina hit, but the aftermath has been anything but fun. Hurst says the local, state, and federal authorities have ignored the people in the French Quarter.
They never did set up a disbursement center in the French Quarter. I don't know why. But we have since we're open, we have become a distribution center. We have to send our friends and neighbors to other places to bring things into here so that the French Quarter people can have some relief, you know? I don't know why that happened. It seems like we're being left out. Is that because we were high and dry?
The Algiers neighborhood on the west bank of the Mississippi River also did not flood after Hurricane Katrina passed through. Many of the residents there fled, including almost all of the children. But some residents who did flee the disaster are beginning to return. Mrs. Brown, an Algiers resident, returned 2 weeks after Katrina and found her home suffered minimal damage from the storm. She and her family have no plans on moving anytime soon.
It's nothing like home, no matter where you go, you know, unless you have plans or mind to move on, you know, in different places. So, really right now, I would like to stay here.
Grassroots activists from around the U.S. are also converging in the Algiers section of New Orleans to provide relief to people in the area and help rebuild their infrastructure. Operating under the name Common Ground, activists are organizing food giveaways and trash removals, while others are busy setting up classes for kids at one of the local elementary schools.
There will be a free medical clinic open at the Landry High School Auditorium September 13th and 14th.
While Army medics and Red Cross volunteers are now on the ground, the Common Ground Wellness Center, a makeshift health clinic operating out of a nearby mosque, was first in Algiers to begin treating patients. Roger Benham, a wilderness EMT from Connecticut, helped set up the clinic. Benham says the center is still serving an average of 50 patients a day.
The folks in this neighborhood were served mainly by charity hospitals before, and frankly, the quality of health care they're getting now from our people is like nothing most of them have ever seen in their lives before. And if you just explain to them what their conditions are, they can manage a lot of it on their own, and they can know a lot more what's going on with their own bodies. And nobody ever did that to them before.
it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. We have people coming from outside areas riding their bikes to come to the health clinic here. You know, we've brought universal health care to Algiers.
Despite massive flooding in her neighborhood, Lainey Halbert's home in the Upper Ninth Ward was spared from major damage. Halbert, who co-chairs the Louisiana State Green Party chapter, evacuated August 29th before Katrina hit, but intends to move back there and start a similar project in the near future.
I'm going to bring love back to my city. That's what I'm about. And there's people that have already shown up here to come bring love back to my city.
Former Black Panther and community activist Malik Rahim, a lifelong New Orleans resident, refused to be evacuated. Rahim spearheaded the Common Ground Collective in an effort to maintain the Algiers community in the aftermath of Katrina.
You know, this it was just a wake-up call for the progressive people, I believe, in this world to come together and get on their job. Because, it's time for us who say they're progressive or say that they stand up for truth and justice to put those petty differences aside, to come together, that people who could be saved is being lost or living half-butchered lives. We have to come together. We have to say if we really believe in peace and justice, then it's time for us to come together right here and make this an example.
Rahim believes firmly that people who are organized don't need the government to rescue them.
We can make sure that we benefit from this event, that we come together, that we develop the mechanism that if this happened again, which is one of the main things that I'm trying to do right now, develop the mechanism that if this happened again, we have our own emergency preparation, our response for it, that we will get people out of harm's way. We will move them to a place that where they will be safe. We will have our health clinic there. We wouldn't be waiting no 2 weeks. We have the mechanism to feed you and to clothe you and to house you.
Donations of money, food, clothes, medical supplies, toiletries, camping gear, books, computers, and many other items are coming in from all over the U.S., and more supplies are needed. Again, Lainey Halbert.
This is what it's about. You know, this is truly from the bottom up, grassroots democracy.
We need our own government, you know. I think we would have fared better.
Henry, a food distribution volunteer at St. Mary's Church in Algiers, says after Katrina hit, the city was in a state of crisis.
And here in the West Bank side, you know, the agencies were so consumed by the city, the Superdome, those areas, that we need our own government over here. And that's all we were doing, playing a part in government over here in the West Bank.
For now, a majority of New Orleans residents are dispersed in shelters across 34 different states. A website, commongroundrelief.org, was launched to assist them in finding resources. Water, food, clothes, and other supplies are still needed in great numbers to provide relief to these citizens as they try and rebuild their lives.
I believe that this is not the end. It could be a new beginning, you know, for us.
Baptist minister and Katrina survivor, Tim Hall.
Really and truly, we have come together in unity as people. And this here wasn't about black and white. They had white lives that had been lost just as well as black. But the thing was that in New Orleans, by the city being predominantly black, it was focused on us. When change come, it's then you got to change your state of mind. You know, and out here in Dallas or wherever they're at, you know, they got to realize that they're not home. And, you know, and once they adapt to their environment, I believe that they can make it. It's going to be all right, man. I have no problem with believing that. And I'm quite sure they have no problem. Some of us have no problem believing that either.